This is Haunted Texas and Beyond, and I'm Janine Plummer. I'm with Monica Ballard and Dennis Foley. We were invited by Pioneer Farms to have a table during their Dark Harvest event this year. And Dennis, you were in charge of that table. What was it like? How did it go?
I think it went really well, actually, because it was a surprise for people to actually see a table that was informative set there. I think a lot of people showed up with the idea that they were just there to be entertained and go on a trail and sort of get their, you know, scare on with the actors that were positioned around the trail to jump out and do their thing. But when they found out that there was a legitimate paranormal investigative crew there and a ghost tour, we got a lot of people that just naturally came up to the table and were very curious about it. There was a little bit of carnival barking on my side. I would always attract people when they walk by and sort of evoke a response from them. But more or less, people would just come up and they'd be very curious about what we were doing there. And I'd launch into my little initial spiel, which was basically saying that Austin Ghost Tours was one of the longest running ghost tour companies in Austin, Texas. And that, you know, we ran our tours on Friday, Saturday, Sunday nights. And during October, we were running all of our ghost tours downtown. And then we were doing the paranormal investigations at Pioneer Farms and sort of promoting that event. And
you were also talking about equipment.
I was. I had a off to the side of the table, I had my equipment set up that would initially attract the kids, which is always a good marketing.
So we got a lot of good feedback about that table. People enjoyed that, our presence there. Yeah. We were also invited to Pioneer Farms to do ghost tours, and we were also invited to, it was a ghost tour investigation. So it was some history, but it was also, we brought a lot of equipment to see what we would find, and that was Dennis and Monica. You were on site for that. So let's talk a little bit about when the tour investigations, we did, how many nights were there? There was six, five, and there was a lot of, let's talk about the highlighted moments of that experience. It was dark out. It was on the trails. We had access to all the buildings, so we could go in whatever we needed that night. So what were some of the highlights?
Well, I'm going to turn that over to Monica, but I think that to finish off sort of the notion of what the equipment that was attractive to people, typically as the audio producer or the electronic voice phenomenon, the EVP person, I bring really high-end digital recording equipment that I used to use in my old profession for recording interviews for National Public Radio. And so this is top-of-the-line equipment that people were very curious about, thinking, oh, well, you know, this looks like a reporter on the job. And I was like, well, no, this is actually the top-of-the-line stuff that is the clearest defined recording equipment for a capturing that kind of phenomenon, whether it be a EVP or out of body type of.
And this is what you were talking about at Dark Harvest.
This is what I was talking about.
And people that would, is the equipment that you used on the tour and investigation.
Right. And then I have my own ghost kit that I've assembled together over the years, which includes a peak meter and thermometers and all
so
sorts of stuff.
So a lot
like
of,
that.
So as we launch into some of the highlights of that October on Pioneer Farms, a lot of it was not actually on the equipment. It was personal experiences that people had and heard and, you know, saw. And Monica, before we even started the tours and the investigations, while we were going out there, we had things happening.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And this is one of the foundations, I think, of how we operate a little bit differently than other tour companies and other investigation groups, is that we like to go out to the site and familiarize ourselves with the locations and is it going to time out? What is interesting about the building? What are the things that we have to look out for as far as safety of the guests are concerned? So I know that you and I went out there and walked around with one of the reenactors and just sort of got the long tour where we took our time and really sort of familiarized ourselves in the daylight with where we were going to go.
I'm going to jump in right here and say, you must tell the story that one of the volunteers told us. It was in the Bell House.
Yes.
This is something, and I've heard thousands and thousands of ghost stories. And this was when we were checking it out.
Sure. So one of the volunteers who was taking us around that day shared with us that she had been a volunteer with Pioneer Farms since she was 9 years old. She, at the time of this story, was 12. And she was told to lock up the Bell House, which is one of the more historic houses on the property that had been moved from another part of Williamson County to Pioneer Farms. A lot of activity there. And so she walks in and she's getting ready to lock up, and she hears from the master parent's bedroom down the hall, she hears voices. And she thought, oh, great, I'm 12 years old and I have to put on the authority figure persona and kick some people out and tell them the farm is closed. But as she drew closer down the hallway, she recognized one of the voices. It was hers. Mm-hmm. And she stopped and she listened in on this conversation. It was a conversation that she had had the previous year in that room with another volunteer, talking about how someone had just joined the team and would they fit in? Would they be a good fit? Would they enjoy themselves? She listened back to a conversation that she had had the previous year.
Whoa, that is a glitch in the matrix.
I tell you
that
what.
That is a glitch in the matrix. So I've never, ever heard that. That is unusual.
Yeah, yeah. To me, it says that it's as though her thought particles preceded her. And they recognized her by playing back.
I don't even, I think that reality is complicated.
Yes, that's true. More than is dreamt of in our philosophy.
What was the other, when we were, before we actually did the ghost tour investigation, there was another event that happened that was particularly noteworthy.
Someone walked into one of the recreated rooms and all the furniture and furnishings changed as though it was part of the original house. It was just kind of like for three.
So she walks in and she's in her own mind doing whatever. And
yeah,
it kind of glances in and sees.
She sees the room as it was. So the lighting is different. The exterior is different. The furnishings are different. Everything is different for about 3 seconds. And then it switches back to present day.
Yeah.
Where they have brought in.
Yeah.
You know, not reproductions. They're still antiques, but they're not the original furnishings
of the
house.
It's a whole different, yeah. You know, and that is something I've heard sort of reoccurringly. I mean, I always will remember someone driving and they just glanced and the whole neighborhood was like it was 1920s and the cars and the people and the buildings. And then in the blink of an eye, it was back to abandoned buildings and no one was there.
I had heard the same sort of story from a valet guy at the Driscoll who said that he opened the door for some guests. And when they walked out, he let the door go and it stopped, and a tall gentleman with a tall hat walked out and wished him a good evening. And he said, in that moment, I looked inside the hotel and it was completely different. And there were people walking around in period clothes. And he said, and as soon as the door closed again, everything switched back.
Yep. That's a reoccurring story that we hear. All right. So
really interesting.
There's a lot of stories and we have to get through this podcast because a lot of stuff happened. What was something else that happened during the before we did the actual investigation?
I went back on a Saturday and just sort of walked around by myself and mumbled the stories to myself so that I could have that sense memory of here I am and this is what it looks like and this is the story connected with this building. And the whole time I would be rolling audio just in case. And things did come through very roughly. And we find this over and over that when we're new to a location and we start to get familiar with the place, that they start skirting around. They start getting familiar with us and seeing who's there. And
they're paying attention. They're listening.
And
the
more often that we come there and we retell those stories, the clearer the communications get. It's as though someone's fine-tuning a radio to that certain frequency where they know they can come
and
through to
us. We all know, I believe it, you don't have to be in the dark.
Nope.
You don't have to be silent. You don't have to be alone. If their presence wants to be known, there's a way. And they're more brilliant than we are. It's always brilliant. All right, let's go on to starting these. So we had the first night out. I was not there. Dennis was there. Monica was there. What was the first night out like? What was the weather like?
Oh, first night. Sultry and warm.
It was, and there was no breeze. Anywhere.
That was before the big cold front came through. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Did anything extraordinary happen on that first night that you remember?
Sure. We stopped at the Orsay House, which is one of the buildings that we don't go into. We just sort of stand off to the side. But there had been a story of a man in a hat, and they call him Hat Man. It's like, really, that was the best we could do. But he's often seen in a duster coat leaning up against the fence. So I was telling this story, and as we told this story, the equipment that we handed out, which were some EMF detectors, started lighting up and going a little crazy. And Dennis revved up his sound equipment and stood near the fence. Dennis, why don't you tell us more about that?
So as that story was being told, I was also challenging whatever spirits might be in the house at the time. And I said, you know, the piece of equipment that I'm holding in my hand may look like a gun. It may look like a revolver. And you'll
and
hear
what,
that.
And what is
in
this piece of equipment you're
this
holding?
This is called, it's actually called a shotgun mic, which is a very directional microphone. Okay. When you point at it, and it will absorb the sound that it's directed at. But anyway, as I was describing this microphone, that in fact it was not a weapon, I think whoever was in the house thought that I might have been pulling their leg or something, because inside the house you can hear a door creak open. And it was amazing to hear that it sounded like someone was coming outside of the house to maybe challenge me to a gunfight. So it was
and
pretty amazing.
And the person who was who's the director there, who was there on that tour, the director of Pioneer Farms, this was like huge for her, because she was on the phone calling, you know, sending text messages out. Not talking, but sending text messages out saying, who didn't lock the door on the Orsay House? Right. And was trying to find out who was responsible for not, because that, you know, should have been locked. And it was locked. And everyone was like, nope, that door was locked. And so that was cool.
So let's take a listen to this piece of evidence right here and see what you think. You're going to hear the actual sort of playing out of the conversation I was having. And then I'm going to repeat that sound four times so that you can hear the actual creaking of the door after the challenge was made. Here it is. What I'm holding in my hand looks like a gun. It is not a gun. Thank you. It is a recording device. So if you want to speak into the microphone and let us know a name. Okay, and so I'm starting to hear creaking. So my mic's picking up something that sounds like a door opening.
Are you opening the door? Yes.
Okay, good.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. 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 Yes.
All right. So that was the first night. Does anything else stand out on that night?
Well, when we went to the Tonkawa encampment by the sacred tree.
And down by Walnut Creek.
Right. Yeah. We were down there and, oh man, nothing was happening for the longest time. And I just started getting that feeling of, okay, it's time to move on. And I was wearing a long skirt and a peasant sort of blouse and a hat, sort of a lot of people like to describe it as the Hamburglar hat.
Okay.
But that should give you an image. But we started getting some activity on the meters when Dennis started asking about, what are you afraid of? And I said, this is really unusual, because when I was here, you know, rehearsing the tour, I got impressions that there were, and there's all sorts of stories about this particular location, about people, you know, sensing their presence. And so the questioning started getting around to, is there someone here that you're afraid of? And the answer was yes. And then it was like, is it male or female? It was female. And then it was like, it's okay, it's not Dennis, is it Monica? And the things started going crazy. And it was like, I was really taken aback. It was like, why are you afraid of me? And then finally we hit upon, it was my hat that they were afraid of. So in the ensuing weeks after that, I stopped wearing that hat.
All right. There's a section of the Pioneer Farms that is kind of farther away from the Sprinkle Corner, which is the main area. And it is down by Walnut Creek, and they have a teepee, and they have places where you can sit, and they just kind of have a little bit of a, you know, recreated what a Tonkawa camp would look like. So that's what we, that is what Monica's referring to.
Just a little bit of clarification on why they might have been afraid of the hat, too. It wasn't just that they were afraid of a hat. That makes no sense. There was probably someone on the farm or someone associated with the property that might have been cruel to these kids who wore a hat. And therefore, they associated that.
What about the hat man? We just talked about the hat man.
Well, it could have been anybody wearing a hat. It might have just been a Western-style hat, and they associated that with some sort of barbarity or some sort of act of violence or something, because they were having a very strong reaction to that hat. And then as soon as Monica took the hat off, things calmed down.
For me, it makes me wonder if the hat man from that we just talked about from right up the road isn't at verse or having some whatever with the that whatever's there. I mean, we did So you could have misunderstood that as well.
Well, another aspect was I like to bring my tablet along with me and download photos. And I had photos of Tonkawa children on there. Mm-hmm. And I was showing the visitors. I said, look at these proud people. Look at how regal and elegant they are and just... And I was showing photos of adults, and as soon as I got to the kids, oh man, the meters just lit up like crazy.
So it was so there were two trigger aspects:
yes.
Pictures of the children,
right? And generally, in the ensuing weeks when we went back there again, it was going to the photograph of the Tonkawa children that would ignite.
Always kind of get a response.
Which
is interesting because, you know, the Tonkawa lived in that area of that.
Right, 1841.
Well, they were extinct by then. They became extinct very quickly because they were not a warring tribe, and they often became helpers to the settlers
right,
that
the
came
settlers.
In. They helped battles against the Comanches and battles
sure.
against the Apaches. But they did lose a lot of children. Like in the first year that they encountered the Spaniards, 50% of the Tonkawa population was dead. And so it was decimated very rather quickly. So somehow the children, to me, when I hear children, it's the unsettled just dying so fast kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But let's move on. So would you say those were the highlights of that particular evening?
Oh, we had some interesting experiences at the Texian farm, which is known for its knocking. A lot of times you can do that old shave and a haircut knock and hear two knocks back, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
There you go. Oh my God, it's a ghost. Yeah, we got so much activity that first week that afterwards, when we would lead a group up there, we would keep them off the porch and run that experiment so that we knew that no one was on the porch stepping or...
So you're saying that you did the knocking experiment and something knocked back?
Yes, yes.
Now that's a big deal.
Yeah.
Well, we actually do have that on audio. I think the one that I missed was there was a quadruple knock coming from the kitchen that we missed. So when I walked down to the other part of the house, there's a small kitchen or dining area, and there was a solid four knocks like that. And unfortunately, I wasn't recording that to pick it up. But the response that we did get, I think, was just one solid knock. To get anything is amazing. So so that was a treat, to say the least. And then also on the porch deck, I recall that's where I got footsteps when nobody had gone up to the house yet. So that we did. And let's give that a listen. We'll listen to the footsteps that we caught before actually letting the rest of the tour group up onto the house. And this is what we captured. Take a listen.
And a wide porch. Now, seeing as it's considered another room of the house, you don't just barge onto the porch. You ask, hello in the house. May we come in? May we approach?
Hello in the house. Footsteps. Footsteps on the floorboards.
On the floorboards?
Yep.
Thank you.
let's go on to now. That was the first tour that wasn't, the weather hit after that. Am I right?
Not bad, but nothing
so before
like.
Before we talk about the ones that the tours that we gave when the massive cold front came through with wind and below freezing temperatures. What else stands out from the tours before it became below freezing temperatures?
There was 1 week when we were leading a group around. We went to the Bell House, and the director of events had given me the keys to let people into the house. And we got to the house, and I tried to open the front door, and it was just like, this can't be the key or anything because it's not working. And so I handed them to the director and I said, could you, maybe I'm just not doing it right. And she tried to open the front door and it just wouldn't work. She said, let me try the back door. She goes around to the back door and I start telling the group some of the history of the building and stuff. She comes back a few minutes later and she said, I can't get the back door open either.
So the house would not let you in.
The house would not let us in. Mrs. Bell was not the gracious hostess. And we couldn't figure out why. And I was like, well,
and then
you
just went on and finished the tour.
Sometimes this is what happens. You got to be for what is and work with what you have.
So
and,
you keep going past the Bell House, right? Go on, continue the tour.
So I told them about the events and the equipment. I played some of the evidence that we had captured there before. We went on to the next site. And while we were there, the director and I discovered that someone on the tour had snuck some alcohol onto the property. And it was then that
they were intoxicated and they were drinking.
And yes, they were still drinking while on the tour.
So,
and it was then we realized.
And then there lies my question. What do we know about Mrs. Bell?
Very conservative.
Very conservative.
Yes.
And was the door ever not able to be unlocked at any other time than that particular night? Was that the only night the door?
That was the only night.
That was the only night.
We were not allowed in the Bell House.
So we definitely felt like.
And this totally fit in because we had also heard a story about a film crew that had come and wanted to use the Bell House as a location. And it was while the farm was operating, there are kids on the farm and tourists wandering around and they had generators and stuff like that. And it turns out they were making an adult film.
And what happened?
The generator stopped working. They could not operate doors and windows as they wanted to.
And then they contacted the Pioneer Farm people
right.
to say, the generators won't
yeah.
work and we can't this and we can't
right.
that. And then they were like, oh, you can't even be here.
It's like, you can't be
you
here doing
go.
That.
You didn't know that was happening.
You can't be doing that anyway.
And
so they dismissed them. And as soon as everything was gone, the staff came back and apologized to Mrs. Bell and the Bell family. And it was then that everything started working again.
Yep.
Doors, windows, all that. So it did not astonish me when Mrs. Bell was smarter than us and knew what was going on and said, nope, not my house. Nope.
So that's funny. All right. Another story. There's so many. We have to blast through them. The director of marketing who was there some of the time said that at one point she had separated from the group for some reason to do something. And then when she was turning around to come back, this like giant owl just swooped down and she was just thinking, I don't get paid enough to do this. Because she had, had the door open and close, and she also had her name. She heard her name said twice.
Yes.
But what's interesting about the owl is that in the spiritual beliefs of the Tonkawa Indians, they believed if someone passed on and was not buried correctly, that they remained. The spirit would remain if it was not buried correctly. And often it would make its presence known by taking the form of an owl.
I remember that night when we were later on that night, I had left my tablet with my photos inside the Texian farm. And I told the director, I said, we can just go back and get it after the tour is over. No need to double back right now. So she and I drove the back way to go to the farm afterwards. And I asked her, I said, did you hear that owl? And she said, yes. And she told me that she was frightened so much of owls that it was just a phobia of hers. But we went to the Texian farm And she unlocked the place, and I went into Papa's bedroom where I had left my tablet. And when I picked it up, she said, "Wait, stop moving." And she said, "Do you have a flashlight?" And I said, "Yeah." And she said, "Shine it toward that chair." And I did, and the chair was rocking back and forth.
Mm.
And I said, "Papa, just here for my tablet, okay?" And
that kind of explains a lot of why she was just like, I don't think she was expecting any of that.
So she was locking up, and I was heading back to her car, and from the back of the house, I swear to God, I heard a man go, "Hey!" or something like that. And I said, "Susie, hurry up."
I think one of the other highlights of the evening was at one of the properties called the Kruger Farmstead, the Kruger House, and we were doing what was called a shack hack. It's basically a radio that has its frequency scanner disconnected so that it runs through all the channels. And the notion is it's ITC, which is intertrans communication, using television and radio devices, things like that, so spirit voices can communicate through that medium. And as we were conducting the experiment, you typically ask questions of the radio. It sounds kind of crazy here, but you're basically trying to evoke a response if a spirit wants to use that transmitter or that transmission device as a way to communicate. And so we were asking a series of questions that evening, and one of the proprietor's name happened to have the name Susan or Susie. And everybody was wondering where Susie was. Where'd Susie go? Where'd Susie go? Is there a Susan here? And you get a very, very clear response from the shack hack that says, "There is no Susan here." And I thought it was pretty neat that they were identifying
that. Let's hear it.
So let's take a listen.
All right, last time you called out Susie.
Susie, you know Susie who helps run the farm? The pup.
Maybe
So the other EVP I want to talk about that Dennis sent.
Okay, so in the Bell House, we had a really neat experience with the music box. This is called a trigger object, where you're taking a device that may evoke a response from spirits that they identify with. In this case, it was a little music box that played Twinkle Twinkle or Happy Birthday, one of those tunes that's very recognizable across generations. And as I was cranking the tune along, we would constantly be getting hits on our peak meter. And what you'll hear in this soundscape that we'll present is the peak meter going crazy every time I stop playing the trigger object. They wanted to hear that music. And that at that point, it's also should be noted that Monica had a device called an SLS camera, which is basically a light emitter camera that detects energy if you point it at a certain area. And if there happens to be an energy field walking through that, it will denote that in a sort of a linear sort of stick figure type of fashion. And
stick
what was
figure.
Yeah, it looks like an electronic stick figure. It's not something like in Hollywood that you'd see on the green screens or something, but it's basically detecting a presence of energy moving through a field there. And when I put the trigger object down on a table and I said, "Can you please play that for us?" Well, we didn't get a response from the music box itself, but the SLS camera fascinatingly picked up an image of the stick figure bending down, looking at it, reaching out towards it, and then kind of dancing around it. Like they wanted to continue to play. It's just a really neat. You'll have to go check our website for
that. So
what
we can hear on your EVP is you can hear the music box playing, and then you can hear the sound of the beeping.
Yeah, and let's play that. You'll sort of get the notion of the excitement of everybody and how neat it was, so you can get involved on it on that level. But otherwise, you imagine yourself as listening in on this trigger object and these spirits sort of dancing around and being very, very happy about it. You'll hear a fun piece of audio.
People who were on the tour could see it, but
right.
It's an interesting audio that kind of...
And we'll give that a listen right now.
I love it.
Sometimes if they hang around you too long, you'll start to get a headache, which is my common response to something that's sticking around for a little bit too long. In which case, you just ask them to back off. Yeah. I got a headache last night.
So something else that was amazing to me was one of the first weeks when we were at the Kruger farm and doing some work with the Shack Hack. And by the way, let me commend you. You've got an amazing Shack Hack device that automatically changes frequencies throughout. It changes settings.
And yes, Dennis does have that.
I thought that was way cool. I had not seen something like that before.
Yeah, the device that Monica is referring to is something called the PSB7, and it's actually invented by fellow frontier scientists like ourselves. That it's a radio transmitter that is actually specifically designed for ITC research communication, and it has all sorts of scanning.
What's ITC?
Inter-trans-communication. It's okay. Just basically the way that spirits communicate through radios, televisions, whatever frequencies are available to communicate through, walkie-talkies, cell phones even, et cetera, et cetera. And this one has a neat ability that it sweeps as it's going through the frequency channels. You can set it to AM or FM or other frequencies. You can speed up that frequency flow or you can slow it down. You can reverse it. You can do all sorts of these neat effects to sort of, you know, maybe they don't particularly feel comfortable with a certain scan frequency rate. So you can increase that so you get more language coming out of it and more ability for them to speak through it. So yeah, the PSB7, it's a pretty neat device to have on any investigation.
We were asking about the people that we knew had occupied the house. The Kruger farm.
Okay.
Which was owned by, it was owned by Frederick and Frederica
mm-hmm.
Kruger.
Yes.
And it's this one itty bitty room, essentially.
And they had like 11 children.
They raised 13 kids 13 here. Kids. 13 kids.
The girls slept inside on a loft.
Right.
And then the boys slept out in the
trundle bed and things like that. Yeah.
And the boys slept in the outbuildings and the barn, in the porch.
So we were asking about, you know, who is here, and you know, we were throwing out some names, and Dennis said Frederick, and a voice came back and very clearly said Frederica. And now think about that. That's a lot of syllables
mm-hmm.
for a spirit to give back to us. And it wasn't parroting back Frederick. It actually said Frederica.
Are you here, Frederick? Frederica? Frederica? Frederick? Frederica? Frederica? Frederica?
It was a tremendous opportunity, and we certainly want to thank Pioneer Farms for inviting us out there and starting this relationship with us, because every single week brought something new and interesting. And we learned one week when we had like more people than we had ever had before on an investigation. All right, how are we going to do this? And we sort of carved it up saying, okay, at the Bell House, we can do these techniques. At the Texian Farm, we can do these. At the Tonkawa. And so we tried out different techniques, and everybody got hands-on use of the equipment. The dousing rods experiment worked fantastically, and people were really, really intrigued by that. So
yeah, it's a really exciting relationship.
Yeah.
We're going to be out there doing it again.
Yep.
The last Saturday of every month.
Mm-hmm.
Stay tuned for more information about what happens at the Pioneer Farm.
Right. And the more people immerse themselves into possibility thinking in that place, the easier it is for the spirits who come with them to find an easy route. And an available opportunity to communicate with the living.
Well, I'm Janine Plummer with Monica Ballard and Dennis Foley. Thank you for listening, and we will be back with another podcast soon. And this is Haunted Texas and Beyond.